Welcome to this podcast from Christchurch London. For more information and resources, please go to christchurchlondon.org.
Great to see you all here. My name is Al. I feel like I'm booming, am I okay? I feel like I know many of you. In fact, those of you I do know are looking at me like, how they let that guy speak. But those of you who I don't know, hi, my name's Al. I'm married to Tanya, sitting right here. That's my boy Rupert making all the noise on the front. That's us, T Marsh. And Tanya and I have been, just a brief introduction, Tanya and I have been married for almost 9 years. Rupert is just over a year old. Both of them are kind of the biggest blessings on my life, I'd say, by a long way. A few other things to say about us. We live in East London, which is clearly God's favorite part of town. We live just down the road in Stepney Green, so we can walk here. We didn't. We drove today, but we could if we wanted. I work as a journalist, a financial journalist, and I work for an American company in the city. And for those of you who voted to leave the EU, thanks. Basically, Brexit has hijacked the news agenda. Every single story now, whether it be about China or like the dollar or anything, it's now about Brexit. The reason for everything is Brexit. So thank you very much for that. And it will be for quite a while longer. And one final thing to say by way of introduction, and you probably haven't realized this, is that I am ginger. That's going to come as a surprise to you. But the reason I'm saying this today is, well, there's many reasons, but one, just to say that Christchurch London, much like the kingdom of God, is all about equal opportunities. So we've had black preachers, white preachers, men, women, and now we're really breaking the glass ceiling today. We have a ginger preacher, so here I am. And while we're on the subject of gingers, since you brought it up, I'd like to say a few other things. You, with your kind of like run-of-the-mill, everyday brown hair, or your kind of perhaps not quite as ordinary but pretty dull blonde hair, you wouldn't realize that ginger people are so special and so unique that every generation of redheads has a figurehead. We have a figurehead in every generation. So I don't know who chooses the figurehead, but there is a figurehead. When I was at school, I used to walk down the corridor and people would say, "Skulls, Skulls." Do you know who Paul Skulls is? That guy. He used to play for Manchester United, and he was the benchmark for what all ginger men should be like. But you'd think now, I'm 33 years old, I'm married, I have a child, I have a full-time job, I'm a grown-up. Well, more or less, I'm a grown-up, right? You think that that wouldn't be part of my life anymore. Sadly, it is. In the past year, I've walked past groups of teenagers, or they've walked past me, and I've heard them shout, "Sheeran! He looks like Ed Sheeran!" So, you can't get a break. But so basically, you can go to work tomorrow, go to college, wherever you go, and you can say that you heard a multi-platinum selling pop sensation tell you about Jesus, which is not bad for a Sunday night in Bethnal Green. Anyway, let's move on. Enough about hair and enough about me. I'm going to be continuing today our series that we've termed the Heart of the Matter, which looks at our inner life, i.e. our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, and how we process them and how they affect us and how we can do that in a healthy way, how we can process them in a healthy way. And we've heard some really great talks. Actually, they're all on the website, available to download, on how to navigate, how to handle grief, how to get a girlfriend, or how to navigate romance, I think was the actual title of the talk. And today I'm going to be talking about the idea of a balanced life. So you might often hear about a work-life balance, but I don't think that's a particularly healthy, or maybe healthy is wrong, I don't think that's a great phrase, because it implies that the work part of your life is separate to the living part of your life, a work-life balance. Instead, I want to talk about a balanced life, that being a life in which you give time to enjoying God, enjoying his creation, that being the beautiful city in which we live, enjoying the people that he's put in your life, the people around you, and also to working hard. Sorry if I'm speaking really fast, by the way. I've got a lot to get through. Some of you are looking at me like I'm going quite fast. So anyway, the foundation of everything I'm saying today is not my great idea. It's actually the biblical idea of Sabbath, which is that God has instituted periods of, or a rhythm of working and resting. He's kind of instituted that. And you find that referenced in the Bible on many occasions. I will refer to some of those scriptures later on. But basically, the nub of it is that we were not made to go, kind of all systems go flat out, on the run all the time. That's not sustainable. We won't be able to do that. Now, in saying that, well, basically, what I also want to say is that some of us may have greater capacity than others, i.e. we're more able than others to keep running for a while, but at the end of the day, we all need this rhythm of periods of rest as well as periods of work. Now, I want to say that for some of you who've been coming to Christchurch for a long time, you've likely heard sermons on Sabbath already. In fact, you've likely heard better ones than you're going to hear today. So I'd ask you to just kindly bear with me. But I'd also say, here's a question. How are you doing at making that a practice in your life? Perhaps you could think about that. Okay, so let's get on with it. In Genesis, so at the very beginning of the Bible, the first book is Genesis. And in the first two chapters, right at the beginning, we see God instituting this rhythm of working and resting. We see that God worked in creating the world and then he rested. Now, I don't think that God is resting because he got tired. I think he's resting, perhaps there are multiple reasons, but two that stand out to me. One is that he wanted to take time to enjoy his creation, and two, he wanted to take, kind of set a model for us to follow. And I think it's a model very worth following. If we look, for example, at children, right, they need a rhythm. We call it a routine. It's not a rhythm of work and rest. It's a rhythm of play and rest. But if they don't get it, they get messed up. So, for example, our boy Rupert, he recently turned one, which is a huge deal for any new parents. The first child, he turns one. For him, it was like any other day, although we did buy him a drum, so that was quite a big deal. But we had a party for him, and it was supposed to be from 12 till 2, which is like responsible parenting hours. You come, then you go home and have a nap. It was like, it actually ended up being like 12 till 5 because people were having so much fun, there was such nice food, and we didn't want to leave, they didn't want to leave. And in theory, in any normal afternoon between 12 and 5, Rupert would sleep for an hour, maybe 45 minutes minimum. On that day, it was like, I ain't sleeping, it's my party. All these people here for me. And he wasn't sleeping. So that was fine until we got in the car at 5:30, and then he had an absolute meltdown. I mean, like the end of the world, kind of the end of the night, crying. And as a parent, it kind of stresses you out anytime your kid cries. But the worst is when you're in the car because you're driving the car. You can't, like, stop. You have to keep going. And also, you're, like, in this tin, like, this tin of emotion. And he's, like, in your head screaming. So it wasn't great. So clearly, like, I say that we are not children. We don't need this exactly the same, although sometimes I would quite like to have a nap in the office in the afternoon. But actually, the same principle applies, that if we run, and ignore our own limitations, we're going to get to the same place. We're going to burn out. Maybe we're going to have our own meltdown. Maybe we're going to be in a car thinking it's the end of the world. So there are other, I've talked about the chapter in Genesis. There are other references in the Bible to this idea of Sabbath. There's Exodus chapter 20, which talks about having a, what does it say? It talks about keeping the day as holy to the Lord. Then there's Leviticus 23, all in the Old Testament, spotting pattern here. Leviticus chapter 23, where it talks about it should be a day of solemn rest and a holy convocation. I had to Google what convocation means. It's quite a cool word. I might use it more often. It means a gathering, so a gathering of people. God's people gather together to worship him on that day. But there's one passage that I particularly like to focus on. It's in a book of Deuteronomy, which is the fifth book of the Bible, the fifth chapter of the fifth book of the Bible, Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 12 to 15, says that Sabbath actually serves as a reminder for us of where we've come from. So I don't mean where we grew up. I grew up in Brighton. I think that's kind of irrelevant to the conversation. It's where we came from in terms of who we were before we knew God, what kind of lifestyle we lived before we were in a relationship with him. And also it's a reminder of what he's done, how he's changed our lives, what our kind of new destiny, where we're at now. So I'm going to read it to you. Deuteronomy chapter 5 says, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughter or your male servant or your female servant or your ox, be careful of the ox, or your donkey or any of your livestock or the sojourner who is within your gates, that your male and your female servant may rest as well as you." And then here's the kind of the key verse. It says, "You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath." And so Sabbath serves as an opportunity to remind us of God's goodness and grace to us. In the passage that I've just read, it's talking about a specific instance with a specific people at a specific time. It's quite hard to say specific three times in a row. So it's about talking about the Exodus, which is when God rescues the Israelites, his people, from slavery in Egypt. But while it is specific to those people at that time, actually the Exodus serves as an analogy of what Jesus Christ has done for us and is relevant to us today. And in fact, in the New Testament, which is kind of the second half of the newer part of the Bible, hence the name, actually the Exodus is referred to as an analogy of what Jesus has done on numerous occasions. So, just going to... Thank you. So just as God delivered the Israelites out of slavery in Egypt, so Jesus Christ, through his death and resurrection, offers us an opportunity to be delivered from what the Bible calls slavery to sin and the consequences of that, which is separation from God. So we are, by human beings, by our very nature, have kind of rebelled against God. We've turned away and we've gone our own way. But God, because he's kind and merciful, offers us an opportunity for reconciliation. And that is the nub of what Christians call the gospel, which is the good news, i.e. the message of Christianity, that God so loved us that he gave his only son, that whoever should believe in him shall not perish but have eternal life. That's in John, in the Gospel of John. So if you're hearing this for the first time, you might think, well, how could anyone be so dense as to forget that? I've just said that in the Deuteronomy chapter 5 that Sabbath serves as an opportunity to remind us of what God has done. So if we need reminding, it presupposes that we've forgotten or at least have the propensity to forget. And you might think, well, how could anyone be so dense as to forget that? That God, you know, that God can, has saved us and changed our lives. Well, I would humbly suggest that Christians, myself included, are a little dense. And that God knows it, and that God has graciously given us the Sabbath as an opportunity to remind us of his goodness. As an aside, by the way, if you are hearing this for the first time, if you would say that you're on a journey of faith, and if you want to explore these ideas more, I'd say that's wonderful. I would love to talk to you afterwards if you have any questions with other leaders around, Andy, Tim, Sarah, others. The welcome team are around to help and connect you with some of the connect group leaders. We have a prayer team. They're not there right now, but they will be over there at the end, and they would love to pray for you. And really just come again and hear more of who God is and what he's done in our lives. Okay, quickly moving on, still talking quite fast. So by taking a moment to slow down, to have this moment of Sabbath, we get a reminder that actually we are not indispensable to the running of the world, i.e. when we stop, the world keeps revolving, it keeps going on, we do not hold the world up. Sometimes we might kind of be deluded into thinking that we do. Also, it serves as a reminder of the nub of the gospel, that basically it's not about what we do that's most important. Often, you know, that's the first question you ever ask, what do you do? That's like, that is the defining thing. Actually, it's not what you do that's most important, it's who you are and who you are becoming. So, all that said, I just want to say that the Sabbath is not, so this is God's institution of a rhythm of working and resting is not a kind of mandate for laziness. I'm not saying kick back, put your feet up, just chill out. Although I am kind of saying that, but I'm not saying that exclusively. I'm saying please do take time to rest and enjoy, but actually it's not about being lazy. And here's why. There's a verse in Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, and it's one that's kind of encouraged me a lot in kind of my work and just in general. And it says, whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men. Other translations say, whatever you do, work with all your heart, as for God and not for men. I.e., give all of yourself, give your best energies, give everything that you have to your work. So we're not talking about slacking off, we're talking about giving everything we can, but doing it for God and not for men. So Sabbath, therefore, is not about laziness, but it's about taking the time to enjoy God, savor the life he's given us, that we might be replenished, re-energized, and restored to do the things that he's given us to do. A final thought on what Sabbath is, I'd like to refer you to the author Peter Scazzaro, which is a great name, and he's written a book called The Emotionally Healthy Leader, and it's one of three books that I've kind of leaned on for insight for this talk. As a journalist, I should credit my sources, so here are my sources. Firstly, the Bible, secondly, Peter Scazzaro, and then also a book, Simplify by Bill Hybels, and Crazy Busy, a book by Kevin DeYoung. I'd recommend all three of them if you're interested in this more. Now, Scazzaro says that Sabbath has four key components. Stop work, sounds great. Enjoy rest, also sounds great. Practice delight. By that, he means find activities, invest in activities that leave you feeling energized and renewed. And the other one is contemplate God. So it's not just about kicking back and relaxing, but also spending time looking to God. As a final thought from Scazzaro, he describes Sabbath as a core spiritual discipline. Which discipline doesn't sound like fun, but basically he says that it's crucial to our, if we want to grow in God, if we want to know him better, if we want to be more like him, actually this is a crucial element of that. He says this, and I quote, Almost every spiritual discipline has value, but some practices constitute the core of maturing in Christ. These practices don't save us, but they're indispensable for growth. Think of it this way. We're not saved by reading the Bible. We're not saved by prayer. We're not saved by worship. We are saved by trusting in Jesus Christ alone, who died for our sins and rose from the dead. But if we are not routinely reading Scripture, praying, or encountering God in worship, it is unlikely that we are growing much spiritually. Keeping the Sabbath is a core spiritual discipline, an essential delivery mechanism for God's goodness and grace in our lives. And here's the kind of the key, the kicker quote, as it were, as we say at my company. It provides a God-ordained way to slow us down for meaningful connection with God, ourselves, and those that we care about. Okay, so that's what Sabbath is. I want to move on now to talk about how are we doing at making that a part of our lives. I'm sure actually what I've just talked about, this idea of resting, stopping work, spending more time with God, spending more time with the people that you love, is not a tough sell. I'm not, you know, sounds great, right? But I'd like to ask you how you're doing it at making this a priority in your life. And I would humbly suggest that we're not doing that great. And I would think the part of the reason for that is that we live in a city that's operating at breakneck speed and we are trying to keep up. I mean, listen to the kind of sound at which I'm speaking. Just as an example. So as an example, did anyone hear about the experiment they did at Holborn Tube recently? So I'm a journalist, so I don't really get that kind of thing that scientists may do, but to me it sounded kind of stupid. Basically, they said that the best way to alleviate congestion during rush hour was to have people stand on both sides of the escalator. You know how kind of normally you stand on the right and you walk on the left, and that kind of dynamic is ingrained in the London psyche. That's like how we work, that's how we operate. So someone was messing with that, they were messing with our heads, and they painted blue footprints on both sides of the escalator, and they said, let's everyone stand, and that's the best way to kind of herd the traffic through. I don't know, it doesn't make sense to me, but apparently there's some scientific research that says it works. I've got Hayley to play as a brief video that just shows us how London has responded.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Buses just stand on both sides of the first two escalators. Stand on both sides.
They trialed it a few weeks ago, and some people were getting a bit angry about it. Some people didn't know what was going on, and they really had a go at some other people, so we'll see. It'll be interesting.
I accept that the research shows that it makes people go faster, but I like walking up the stairs, and people move too slowly, and I want to be able to walk up the stairs. I'll probably use a different station. I can use King's Cross as well, so I'll probably go there instead.
And if it makes the traffic go a bit quicker, no problem every day.
So we're too busy to stand, basically. I'd say that in my life, I'm probably busier than I've ever been. Having a 1-year-old kind of adds to that dynamic. So just take you through a weekday. Well, not that weekends are much different, but now that you have a little one, I woke up today at 6:20. Thanks, Rupert. But I wake up on a weekday at 6 o'clock. What do I do then? I kind of try to wake up. I have shower, breakfast, etc. Get Rupert up, give him breakfast, cycle to work. Work 8 till 6, writing this brilliant journalistic articles that, you know, everyone's reading, retweeting. It's great. Then I turn off, go home, cycle home, and then I'll give Rupert a bath. Tanya will put him to bed, and then we'll eat, and then maybe, like, you know, we'll be done by like 8 o'clock. But then I still might have some admin to do. I might have, like, Tanya and I might have to, like, talk to one another, like married couples tend to do that kind of thing, and just life kind of it vanishes. But you don't need a child to be busy. You really don't. I mean, I'm sharing from my own experience, but you don't need a child to be busy. You can have all your hours taken up with work, then posting all your great insights on social media, and then rushing to this meeting over here and trying to meet this person over there and doing that thing over there. And it's really easy to end up exhausted. Matt Chandler, who's a pastor of a church in Texas, I don't know if it's Dallas or Houston, I can't remember, but a big city in Texas, and he's a guy I like a lot. He says that life is a way of endlessly piling on. I don't know if that's an American phrase or just whatever, it's true. He says how, like, you empty your inbox. In my inbox, I've got all these emails that I need to reply to, but I haven't got around to. You finally get through them, then what happens? You get more emails in your inbox. you have a to-do list, you check everything off. Then what happens? You've got more things to do, right? It kind of life has a way of endlessly piling on. And with the 24-hour news cycle in which we live, social media, life is kind of nonstop, and there's always something that's vying for our attention, our energy, but it's always something trying to grab us. But while that's true, while there's kind of societal factors or environmental things of which are true, I actually think that there's a sense where we don't stop that piling on, and we can even encourage it for a whole number of unhealthy reasons. Firstly, is that we want to appear more important than we are. We mistake busyness for importance. We think that people with jobs with big responsibility, well, people with jobs with big responsibility probably have a lot of things to do, but we shouldn't confuse busyness with importance. For me, this whole concept is quite interesting. So I work as a journalist, as I've said, and I'm writing about what's going on in the market. So I don't have any great insights myself, so don't ask me about stock picks or anything like that. No idea. But I call people, I call traders at investment banks, I'm calling people at hedge funds. I want to know what's happening. That's part of my job, a journalist, to try to speak to people. So I'm called people, and I've had a couple of occasions where I've called someone, and I'm like, hi, John, how are you doing? He's like, hi, Alistair. Alistair's like my full name. That's like my grown-up name. I use that at work. I'm Al, everywhere else. But hi, Alistair, how are you doing? And then I'm like, yeah, how are you? And I want to talk to him about what's going on in the market. But he says, yeah, I'm actually on the beach in Spain with my family, and you can hear his kids playing in the background. He's like, oh, sorry, I'll call you next week. Don't worry about it. It's like, no, I want to talk to you now. What do you want to talk about? Like, bond yields. Does anyone know what a bond yield is? No? Okay, good. Never mind, that's for another sermon. But basically, he wants to talk. I've had this on a number of occasions, but he wants to talk to me. Why? Because obviously I'm a very nice person, but, and then we have a great conversation. But beyond that, it's more, he wants to be part of the conversation. He wants to have his name appearing in print. He wants to be kept in the loop. He wants to feel important. I even had one banker, who's a very nice guy, he told me that after he got married, like literally he walked down the aisle late, and then he checked his BlackBerry, his work BlackBerry, and checked his emails. True story. So don't do that. Another reason why we don't practice Sabbath because we want to appear important and we think that busyness equates to importance. Another reason is that we are afraid of what we face when we slow down. We don't want to stop because we're kind of afraid of the silence, because in that moment of silence, we are faced with the true reality of our hearts, of what we're actually like. And there might be things that we feel ashamed of, or we might feel areas of inadequacy, or things where we feel that we've not met up to God's standards, and we don't want to face that reality. And so it's quite easy to hide behind our noise and our busyness. Now, so that dynamic exists in life, but actually it also exists in the natural world. There's a guy who I came across in this talk through Matt Chandler called Bernie Krause, who is a natural sounds expert. That is a real thing. And it basically means that he records natural sounds. So that's like birds in the hedgerows and crickets in the field and that kind of stuff. And he does it for film soundtracks. And he said that in the 1970s, to get one solid hour of kind of good recordable material, it would take him 10 hours of recording to get 1 hour. But now he said it takes him 1,000 hours to get 1 hour. That's how much the world is kind of sped up and how noisy the world is. So basically, no one likes silence. So we like to fill their space with noise, literally, because we don't want to talk about the areas in which we've fallen short in some way. But I would say that if we don't address those areas, we are in denial about the true condition of our hearts, and we stick obstacles in the way of what God might want to do in our lives. A third reason why we don't practice Sabbath is that we're too busy pleasing people. This is a great quote it's a very apt quote from Kevin DeYoung and from the book Crazy Busy. He says, we are busy because we try to do too many things. We do too many things because we say yes to too many people. We say yes to all these people because we want to be we want them to like us, and we fear their disapproval. It's not wrong to be kind. In fact, it's the mark of a Christian to be a servant. But people-pleasing is something else. Doing something so you can love others is one thing. Doing it so that others might love you is quite another. In Luke's Gospel, which is the third book in the New Testament, we have the account of where Jesus visits two sisters, Mary and Martha. It's quite a well-known story. And you see in that story, it's in Luke chapter 10, you can see there the different approaches. So one sister wants to play host, wants to kind of appear like she's trying to people please. The other sister wants to please God and wants to hear from God. And I'll read it to you, and it's quite clear which approach Jesus thinks is best. So Luke chapter 10 says, "Now, as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me.' But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.'" So in addition to pride and people-pleasing, Kevin DeYoung in his book, Crazy Busy, suggests a whole load of other reasons why we fail to practice Sabbath, why we fail to institute or kind of build into our lives this pattern of working and resting. And conveniently, they all begin with P. So here we go. He says, pats on the back. We work hard for recognition. Possessions. We work hard to own stuff. Now, it's not nothing wrong with that, but it's like it's when we take pride in the possessions, that's where it can be a slippery slope. Proving yourself. Ambition is good, but what are you ambitious for? For your own glory or for God's? Poor planning. Another one, perfectionism. You can't stop until it's all perfect. Prestige. If I keep pushing myself, finally I will amount to something. And then last one, posting, which I think is quite interesting. He says that pride can lie behind a lot of what we post on social media. So our Twitter account is all full of look how clever we are, look how intelligent we are. If you look at my Twitter feed, it's definitely. Facebook is more, look how together my life is, look how wonderful I am, look how much fun I'm having. Same idea. So in London, it's very easy to have an unbalanced life. We're running full steam ahead with everything, with relationships, with jobs, with friendships, with social media. And run. But that's something that we cannot sustain and ultimately will burn out. And I have to ask you, what is the consequence of all this rushing and not savoring the life that God has given us and the God who gave us that life? Matt Chandler, the pastor I referred to earlier, says that in all the rushing around, you can miss what he calls the tender mercies of God. Now, that's not salvation. I mentioned that earlier. That Sabbath is not to do with that. But he's saying the tender mercies of God is specific examples in your life that just illustrate to you how good God is. He talks about his son, who is slightly older than my boy, and he was saying how when he was like 2 or 3, he used to mash words together. Like, I think he said like last a year or something like this, which I think guess is either yesterday or last year or something like that, I don't know. But to him, it was very cute. And these are just things that can really build us up. For example, with us, Tanya has taught Rupert what aeroplanes are. And so every time an aeroplane goes past, which happens quite a lot, Tanya says, that's an aeroplane. And Rupert, I mean, he can't say aeroplane yet. He can speak French, he plays the trumpet, and he's already on the England cricket team, but he can't say aeroplane. You know, give him a break, he's nearly there. But so he doesn't say aeroplane, he goes, ah, ah. Well, that is there a photo? Yeah, there he is. Look at his little socks pointing, and yeah. Those are kind of the things I like that a lot. But actually, as I said, I'm giving examples from my own life. You don't need a child for this. There are other things that could be the tender mercies of God. Perhaps it's a morning run along the canal. I mean, that wouldn't work for me, but some of you are running types, so maybe it would. Maybe it's like artisan coffee served by like a dude with like a proper beard. I mean, this is a good beard. This has got wife sign off. You know, my wife has signed off on this beard. But I'm talking about, you know, the proper East London, you know, like big bushy one. I respect a beard like that. It's a good artisan coffee served by someone like this. Maybe it's a beautiful sunset. Maybe it's an evening spent with friends in deep conversation. So in all our rushing around, we can miss some of these moments. We can miss some of these things that kind of really revitalize us. But I wonder also if this incessant noise-making and our constant running around, actually if it wreaks havoc on our ability to hear God and our ability to walk closely with him. Now, the reality is that maybe some seasons are busier than others. And as I've already said, right now, I feel like my life is busier than it's ever been. But I think that's par for the course with small children. That's what you signed up for. And I'm hoping that in the future, it might chill out a bit. I don't know. But whether you're in a period of kind of frenetic activity or whether things are kind of chugging along nicely, I would say that for all of us, we need to build into our lives this rhythm of working, you're probably working already, but building periods of rest alongside work. Okay, finally, you've been very patient. Thank you for listening to me. I'm nearly done, but I want to say a few more things, so hang in there. I've tried to describe what Sabbath is. I tried to do that. I've tried to say some of the reasons why we might avoid it. And now I want to say some of the reasons how we can actually do it. So to get us started, I want to refer to a guy called Bill Hybels, who is a pastor in the U.S., leads a big church in Chicago. He's been mentioned in many preachers before, so we're on safe ground. And he talks about, in his book called Simplify, he talks about a period of life where he was just overworked and he burned out and he was totally depleted. And he says that after that experience, he talked to a whole load of other Christian leaders and business leaders. And he talked to them about what their own experience of being burnt out and depleted. And he describes how he asked them to imagine a bucket, so like a bucket of water. And he says, draw on that bucket the level of kind of your energy. So if you're at the top, then you're kind of brimming over with energy and kind of life and everything's great. He was obviously pretty low at the bottom. But then he said to them, to the Christian leaders, describe what full bucket living is like. Remember a time when it felt like the bucket was full and describe what that felt like. And this is kind of the responses that he got. I pray my best prayers. I feel the presence of God more consistently. I'm more attentive to the whispers of the Holy Spirit. I love my spouse and family well. I make better decisions about my schedule. I feel more creative. I feel eager to do God's bidding. So with that in mind, here are some suggestions for how we can aim for like bucket-filled living. Yeah. Okay, firstly, work out what you enjoy, if you don't know that already, and do that. So There are many things that we have to do in this life, but they're not all enjoyable. Some things really fill us with joy and life. For example, maybe you play a musical instrument. Maybe you should go away tonight and play your cello or whatever it is. Maybe you love to read. Maybe you need to kind of get a good book, find a corner in a great coffee shop and just sit and read. Maybe you like to browse the East End markets. Maybe on Saturday you need to go down Broadway Market and fill your face with all that goodness. Maybe you're a foodie. Maybe you need to go to Borough Market and buy some really quirky like red vegetables, something no one's ever heard of, and then cook it for your friends and then boast about how you know what this weird thing from Africa is. Maybe you should do that. For me, there are a few things that really fill me with energy, and one of them is like long walks, but especially in the city. So Tanya and I, we're not really kind of hikers. We're like city walks. When we were first dating, we used to walk a lot in Moscow. Then we've walked a lot together in London. And one of our kind of favorite holidays was we went to New York. And we stayed on the Upper East Side on East 93rd. That's kind of like the Northeast, the Upper East as it sounds like it's where it is, if you don't know New York. And we walked from there all the way down to Battery Park, which is like the southern tip of Manhattan Island. And we walked back in a day. I don't know how long that is, but it's a very long way. But we really enjoyed it. And you'll usually find us on a weekend, either down by the river, along the canal, in Victoria Park, walking, and usually interspersing that with coffee and maybe a pastry or two as well. I also really love music. I'm one of those weird people who can actually just sit and listen to music, not do anything else. I don't think most people think that music is a background thing. I actually think that we should like respect the artistry that's gone into music and enjoy it. So coming up behind me, there should be a few of the albums that I really enjoy. She's not that one. That's the Weeknd playlist. No, that is the Weeknd playlist. Yeah, thank you. So these are the kind of albums that I really enjoy. Just a bit of music trivia. Does anyone know the bottom right-hand corner? It's not labeled. Anyone know what that is? Come on. Band, Worship Band? That's Led Zeppelin 4. That's like a seminal rock album. You should know that. Okay, clearly not. So enjoy life. Enjoy the things that build you up and that leave you feeling energized. Enjoy our wonderful city, not just the East Side. Go to the West End. Go to Hyde Park. Even, dare I say it, go south of the river. Like, I know. Go to Greenwich and then come back very quickly. Yeah. Also, as another thing to do, take moments of silence. I said earlier that can be scary to face up to the true reality of our hearts. But actually, if we want to move on, if we want to kind of progress in God, I would suggest that that's a good thing to do. And it's not about despair, but then when we turn to God, he's able and willing to help us and change us if we look to him. Jesus often would retreat to a silent place. He actually found for himself that was something that brought clarity and was good for him. So if it's good for him, I think it might be good for us. We read in Psalm 46, a very famous verse. It says, be still and know that I am God. And I would suggest that in our moments of being still and quiet, we acknowledge our limitations, we acknowledge our weaknesses, we stress our dependency on God. And actually, all this requires humility, it requires obedience. And these are things that are often tricky or difficult. We being humble and being obedient is not something that comes naturally. But I think that these are things that really please God's heart and that he will respond to them. Also, make moments to rest. And I'd like to say that I've been talking about Sabbath, and often traditionally Sabbath has been a 24-hour period, often from like 6 o'clock on a Friday night to 6 o'clock on a Saturday. And actually, still some people even in the city to this day celebrate or practice Sabbath in that way. I don't think it has to be like that. That may not be practical for you, but perhaps it could be a chunk of time, perhaps a Saturday afternoon. Perhaps it could mean blocking out some evenings during the week. But whatever it is, it's about deliberately committing some time to enjoying, what did I say earlier, stop working, enjoying rest, practicing delight, and contemplating God. Finally, have moments for spirituality, not just more leisure time. So I hope I've said that Sabbath is not just about chilling out at work, putting your feet up. It's also not about just having more leisure time. I want to say that, because that could just describe a Saturday. I think that taking time to rest, enjoying the world around you, but also enjoying God, thinking about him, perhaps some things that could help you there would be like listening to a podcast. Some of the sermons that we've had throughout this talk, this series would be great. Perhaps it's reading a book. I've mentioned three tonight that might be helpful or interesting to you. Perhaps it's to get a journal. Some people find that helpful. They get a journal. They write down the things that they found helpful or interesting or challenging or provocative in the Bible or that they've heard on a Sunday. Perhaps that. I'd like to ask, maybe the band could come back. I love the way that we always ask that. Maybe not, as they're like real divas. We have to ask them nicely. So please come back. Please. Thank you very much. But if they don't, you've got me, and that would be bad. In conclusion, if we run hard without stopping, we're going to burn out. That is a fact. And God has made us in such a way, I would suggest, that we will enjoy life the most and be most fruitful if we embrace our limitations, we acknowledge our need for a Savior, we accept his grace, we take a moment to enjoy the many good things he's given us, from this beautiful city to the wonderful people in our lives. This is what humans need all the time, everywhere, but I would suggest it's something that we particularly need in a crazy, busy city like ours. As a final point, and then the band are going to lead us in a song, I'd like to read you a passage from Isaiah chapter 40, which is in the Old Testament. And it's just one of my favorite passages that sort of, I found it encouraging throughout the years, and I think it's really pertinent to what I'm saying tonight. So it says this, "Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint." Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more information or for further podcasts and downloads, please visit christchurchlondon.org.